WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The White House is defending President Trump's suggestions the goal of U.S. bomb strikes on Iranian nuclear facilities was not just about disabling enrichment plants, but regime change as well. Spokeswoman Caroline Levitt.
If they refuse to engage in diplomacy moving forward, why shouldn't the Iranian people rise up against this brutal terrorist regime?
Israel claims it's hit more targets in Iran today, including the notorious Evin prison. The BBC's Joe Inwood.
The entrance was targeted, although there are no reports of anyone escaping. It's also being reported that the headquarters of the Basij, a feared paramilitary group, was hit, along with that of the Revolutionary Guard.
Tehran says its missile strikes targeted Haifa and Tel Aviv today. A heat wave is steaming things up in the Midwest to the east, CBS meteorologist Rob Marciano.
Today, 96 in New York, 99 in Hartford, and 100 degrees down in D.C.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For WXCO News, I'm Brittany Merlot. High heat and humidity still rage, with heat advisories remaining through tonight. The heat index will once again reach the low 100s. And now the threat of severe weather moves in, and the Storm Prediction Center has us in a slight risk. We've got a cold front that is sweeping across the state, which is the reason why thunderstorms are going to become more numerous and widespread. And by tonight, it looks to line up and pack the risk of high winds, which could gust up to 70 miles per hour, causing some scattered damage. It's also going to cool our temperatures down as it stalls over the state, which is going to bring some heavy rainfall and training storms, raining down over the same area over and over again, causing the potential for flooding later this week. Widespread inch of rain is expected, and a good 3 to 5 inches is possible in spots by the end of this week. So stay dry and don't forget the umbrella. Also, be on the lookout for pavement buckling today. Lisa Hale explains.
When weather conditions go from cool to extremely hot quickly, the slabs of pavement in the road could begin to expand and push against each other. If the pressure gets high enough, the pavement can buckle and create an unexpected bump or dip in the road. Residents should remember to buckle up, keep their eyes on the road, and watch for slowing traffic and roadside workers.
And the Wisconsin State Assembly voted unanimously to increase penalties for people found guilty of sextortion last week. Named Braden's Law in memory, the law would allow sextortion perpetrators to be charged with felony murder if their victim commits suicide. The charges that would most accurately apply to the crime currently include a maximum sentencing of only 3.5 years. And the legislation is now with the state Senate, appears likely to advance to Governor Tony Evers. I'm Brittany Merlot for WXCO.
The Pirates come to town. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball. The Brewers and Pirates face off tonight at AmFam Field. Milwaukee with a 9-8 win over the Twins and a 3-game sweep in Minnesota. The last time that happened was 1996. The Brewers now in second place, just 3.5 games behind the Cubs in the NL Central. The Cubs losing yesterday 14-6 to the Mariners. Racing, Alex Palou wins the Expel IndyCar Grand Prix at Road America in Elkhart Lake, becoming the first driver since A.J. Foyt in 1975 to win 6 of the first 9 races of the season. NBA, Oklahoma City Thunder are the NBA champions after beating the Pacers in OKC in Game 7, 103-91. Say Gilgeous-Alexander, leading with 29 points, showing concern for the Pacers' Tyrese Halliburton, who suffered a torn Achilles tendon in the first quarter.
Like, I couldn't imagine playing the biggest game of my life and something like that happening. It's so unfortunate. It's not fair.
That's the Thunder's Shea Gilgeous-Alexander with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Partly cloudy. It's going to be warm and muggy again today with a chance of thunderstorms this afternoon into this evening. And a couple of those could be strong to severe with hail, wind, even an isolated tornado possible. Be weather aware later today. High in the mid to upper 80s, but the heat index will be well into the 90s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 80.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee, it was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station. And on the app, Maggie Dawn.
LGBTQ rights are under attack. At 4:30, Patrick Faribault from Our Lives Magazine joins to discuss what's at stake and how we celebrate pride right here in Wisconsin. Don't miss the Maggie Dawn Show.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. He is known as the Bug Guy. He heads up the entomology lab at UW-Madison, PJ Leash. Is here. Good morning, PJ. It's been way too long. It's like been months and months and months since we had you on the show. How are you doing?
Good, good. It definitely has been a while, Jane. I know we connected last year about all the craziness with the periodical cicadas, and that was kind of
yes
for me at this point. But it's great to be back.
Glad to have you back. I know that we're going to start with ticks.
Yeah.
This is expecting to be a really bad tick season.
It is. And for me, the tick season has really been going on for several months already.
That seems like way too soon.
Well, it does. I mean, one thing I have been seeing, especially the last couple of years, you know, we had that mild El Nino winter 2 years ago, and this last winter was kind of wimpy in a lot of regards. We didn't have a whole lot of snow where I'm located, and folks kind of let their guard down. They think, you know, in their mind, it's December, it's
sure
January. I'm not thinking about ticks. I'm thinking about Christmas decorations and New Year's and stuff like that. And I found quite a few folks will like stop giving their dogs, their outdoor pets, that preventative flea and tick.
Ooh.
And then all of a sudden they're contacting me in late January saying, hey, my dog's got fleas. And it's been warm enough. So
yeah,
when we aren't getting those kind of cold classic Wisconsin winters, some of these things are becoming active a little bit earlier. You could potentially bump into them.
I mean, I never, like, I don't care what the temperature is. Maybelle gets her flea and tick medicine on the first of the month, every single month. And I don't, to me, that's crazy that people would think, well, it's not hot. And we don't live in the woods, of course, either. So why would we, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's January. You think I'd let my dog out? They're going to pick up fleas. It's January.
Right. And I mean, generally the risk is going to be pretty low that time of the year, but like ticks, for example, if it's about, you know, above freezing, maybe it's 40 degrees or thereabouts, you can potentially bump into ticks. So my general mindset is if there's no snow on the ground and it's above freezing, you better be at least thinking about them. Pets should be getting those preventative flea and tick treatments. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're checking yourself and kids and grandkids and stuff like that, because ticks are not something you want to mess with.
Well, and there really isn't, PJ, a good way, but even staying out of the woods isn't enough to protect you from ticks, because they're kind of everywhere.
They are showing up in more and more locations. And it's really interesting to me because the tick situation this is really something that is an emerging health threat in our lifetimes, because the first deer tick, and when I think of ticks in Wisconsin, we've got different species, but there's like the common one folks call the wood tick, also called the American dog tick. If I were going to pick a tick to be bitten by, it would be that one, because I know the disease risks are very low from it.
Yeah.
It's the deer tick that we have the most concerns with. Everyone has heard of Lyme disease, but there's other diseases they carry: anaplasmosis, babesiosis. There's even some viruses, very, very rare at this point. Lyme seems to be our biggest threat, but our first deer tick wasn't formally documented in the state until about the late 1960s, early 1970s. Fast forward today, and they've been found in essentially every county in Wisconsin. So in my mind, we're kind of watching that big bang, or, you know, that rock has been thrown into the pond. The ripples are still expanding, and we don't know fully when that expansion is going to stop. And so you go back 30 years ago and you'd think of, a hunter, an avid hiker out in the woods, they've got to worry about ticks.
Right.
Now we're starting to see ticks pop up sometimes in backyards in suburban areas and stuff like that. And that's a concern.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a really elementary question, PJ, and it's about that, what you just spoke about, the discovery of deer ticks. Was it a matter of they always existed and we didn't know them, or it's something that it was a new species of tick that we discovered in the 70s? Because I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and I can't tell you exactly when, but I just remember there was a time before Lyme disease and deer ticks, and then that's all you heard for a very long time. Is that what happened? Is it like they evolved into a new species, or we just didn't know about them and all of a sudden we discovered them?
Yeah. So if you go back to the 1960s, 1970s, when we were finding our first ones, if you wanted to find that species, you'd have to go way south of us, places like Texas and stuff like that. And so what had probably happened over time is ticks were getting carried up on birds, or, you know, long distance migration of mammals and things like that. And, you know, there's some interesting things that can go on when you have movement of species, be it ticks or other things. You know, let's say in theory you move a lone male from somewhere else and you put a male of that species here in Wisconsin, that's the end of the story.
That tick, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
What if you moved a female? Well, if she had mated, could there be a possibility? Yeah, but you also have to have the right density of ticks. You know, if in theory I moved a male of a species to Kenosha and a female to Douglas County, they're never going to find each other.
They're never going to meet, right.
So you need enough of these things being moved in for them to be able to find each other. And once they do that, if the conditions are right, they can basically get a beachhead, so to speak, or get a foot in the door. Mm-hmm. Then they can start a population and start increasing their numbers.
If you're just joining us, PJ Leash is our guest. He is known as the Bug Guy. He heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks because ticks are a growing concern all across the country, essentially.
And so I'm someone who I went camping once and I found two ticks, one on my leg, one on the back of my ear, which, wow. And what do people do? There's one thing to avoid them. We can talk about that. But like you go camping or you're out in the woods or you're out in your backyard and you find a tick on your leg. What is the next step?
Yeah. So the next step, if you find one on you, is going to be to remove it. Now, if it's just crawling and it hasn't bitten you yet, that's easy. It just, you grab it and
squish it.
I probably wouldn't take it. And well, I probably wouldn't even squish it per se, because if there's pathogens inside the tick, you know, if you had a little cut on your skin or something like that, I wouldn't want to deal with that. I would probably wrap it up in a tissue, put it in a plastic bag so you can seal it, and put it in the trash, or put it that bag in the freezer to kill it. If you happen to be taking a shower and you find a tick on you, flush it down the drain or something like that. But I wouldn't take it and just toss it back on the lawn,
right?
Because they're long-lived creatures.
Right.
And that brings up an important point, because ticks differ from mosquitoes. We know some mosquitoes can carry diseases, and mosquito lands on you, they bite you, they don't feed very long. When ticks feed, it's very different. It's a long, drawn out process. They actually insert their mouth parts, they kind of glue them in place, and they might be attached for several days or upwards of a week. So it's not a fast process like mosquitoes. Also along those lines, when a tick like a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes quite a while. They really need to be attached for about 36 hours, so about a day and a half before transmission can occur. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because if you're out playing in your yard or hiking or camping, maybe you had a tick on you, but if you know, oh, it could have only been on me 3 hours or 6 hours or 12 hours, even if it has Lyme, because you've removed it in a relatively short span of time, it hasn't been on a day and a half, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch. So they really have to be attached. So I generally remind folks to do a tick check at the end of the day if they've been outside, or if I'm going somewhere where I know there happen to be a lot of ticks, I'm probably doing a tick check as soon as I get back to the car or as soon as I get home.
Yeah.
Because that's a great precaution to really, really reduce your risk.
When we found the one in the back of my head was gone. Like, you could just flick it right off. The one that was in my leg was buried. And what we did was we took clear nail polish and we just brushed right over it.
So it can't breathe.
It can't breathe, suffocate it, and then give it a little, and then getting rid of it was a challenge because it had burrowed its head into my leg. And I went to the doctor, everything was fine. But it was just that thing of like, I had just heard of ticks. I was not educated on that. And when that happened, I started to freak out. And so that is good to know that, you know, that I did not know that until right now, that the transference of virus or disease takes a little bit longer. So the tick checks are very important.
But PJ, going back to the best way to get it out, is nail polish or Vaseline, or what do experts recommend?
Yeah, so the best thing is simply to use tweezers or forceps. Grab it as close to the skin as you can and just a slow, steady pull.
Yeah.
We don't want to do anything that may be pretty traumatic to the tick. I've heard of things that when I was a kid, this was circulated. You know, you burn it with a match or something like that, or you crush it. Well, if that tick does have some sort of disease or pathogen, are you potentially introducing that because you're causing a lot of trauma to the tick? So, a slow, steady pull is probably going to be your best route of action for that.
Okay. Ask him nicely. Could you just back out of there? I really appreciate that.
Go on my neighbor's dog. I don't like that dog.
Go there. Yeah. There's a lot of room.
Yeah.
The other thing too, though, and we're joking about this, but Lyme disease is very serious. For folks who have had Lyme disease, that is not a joke.
Right. Yeah, very serious disease. And we do know some individuals can have, you know, kind of longer term problems. In a lot of situations, if it is detected and caught early and treated with a course of antibiotics, folks usually respond pretty well for that. And actually, in some parts of the country, like the upper Midwest where we are, and also New England, those are, if you look at a map of Lyme disease cases, those are the two areas that glow. And so medical professionals will basically, for those parts of the country where you have lots of deer ticks and Lyme disease, if you are bitten by a tick, and you know it's been attached for, you know, a day or two and risk is increasing, often a doctor or physician will prescribe a short-term course of antibiotics because we know that works very well. If you basically, you know, hit it early,
right,
it doesn't have time to cause problems in your body.
Because from what I understand, sometimes, unfortunately, it can take several diagnoses to get to the point where they recognize that it's actually Lyme disease, which can be part of the problem.
Yeah. And there's Lyme disease, and there's actually a couple related microorganisms. There's anaplasmosis, babesiosis, and sometimes the symptoms can be a little bit vague. Not everyone gets the classic bullseye rash that we hear about for Lyme disease, or if you have maybe darker skin, it's just hard to see that rash and it gets overlooked. Then those symptoms can be kind of vague, aches and pains and things like that.
Yeah.
So it can sometimes take a while to get a formal diagnosis.
Or be attributed to something else.
Yeah.
We're going to continue our conversation with PJ Leash. He heads the entomology department diagnostic lab at UW-Madison. He is known as Wisconsin's bug guy. We have a question for you on the other side. PJ from Helene from Muscadet. That is all coming up. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Swing man, she can't hurt. She don't mean no harm. She just don't know what else to do about it. Jane said,
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
Look up cheese curds. You'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, did you guess? It takes 10 pounds of milk, which is a big gallon jug plus a little bit more, to make 1 pound of squeaky cheese curds. Call me your curd girl for this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Skilled trade workers are the backbone of every community and also the Army National Guard. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and in every other trade needed to accomplish the mission. These soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up a little bit later on today, Maggie Dawn's show from 4 to 6. She's going to be talking to Ilhan Berman from the American Foreign Policy Council for a follow-up after the U.S. bombed Iran over the weekend. What does this mean for Wisconsin? Join Maggie Dawn this afternoon from 4 to 6 across the network. We are joined right now by Wisconsin's bug guy, P.J. Leash, heads up the Entomology Diagnostic Lab at UW-Madison. And before we went to the break, P.J., we were talking about ticks. And we had a question from Helena in Muscadet. What about adding nematodes to my yard?
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. So pretty much everyone has heard of nematodes or roundworms. They're these microscopic, pale, worm-like creatures, common and ubiquitous in soil around the world. There are certain nematodes that are associated with plants, some with animals and things like that. And so there's a small group of nematodes we call entomopathogenic or insect-killing nematodes, ticks and things like that too. There's been some work in the laboratory looking at, you know, using some of these. And if you put a tick in a petri dish and put in the right type of nematodes, they can become infected. What I haven't seen really demonstrated would be the kind of the field study aspect of that, to be able to put these nematodes out on your lawn and have them make an actual difference. And I think what would be most important in my mind is getting at the question of, yes, do you kill some ticks? But if you do that, does that make a difference for human health? You know, if we apply these, are we seeing a significant notable reduction in cases of Lyme or something like that? So
right.
Again, I haven't seen that sort of thing from the field aspect. There's still work going on the biological control of ticks. I will say I also have some colleagues here at UW-Madison, Dr. Susan Paskowitz, who's our medical entomologist, and she's got a big lab group. They do a lot of tick research, very, very active in that regard. And they have been doing some studies just using like over-the-counter granular lawn type treatments you can get from the hardware store. And it's been showing some good results in terms of cutting down tick numbers. So there are some options out there. We are seeing more and more companies offering tick control services. And in my mind, you don't necessarily have to treat your entire lawn, but let's say you have a situation where maybe you live in northern Wisconsin. So you've got some lawn around your house, then you've got the woods. The high-risk area for me is going to be kind of the edge where your lawn meets the woods. Usually a lawn, if it's open and sunny, that's often too dry. It's not great habitat usually for ticks. They like more of the vegetation, holds in more moisture. And so if they're in the woods, they may wander into edges of yard. So we know there's some research where you could use a little bit of a granular product, kind of treat a band, like a perimeter at the edge of your yard, and that may help the ticks from moving in. So that way, if you have, say, a kid's swing set closer to the house, you know, risk is going to go down in locations like that.
I had read somewhere, and correct me if I'm wrong, do possums eat ticks? Because I might just get a possum.
So there's this idea out there that possums are just like Hoover vacuums going around sucking up ticks.
The horrible things,
and,
yes.
Yeah, I've done some digging on that, and I have not really found, a strong scientific backing for that. And what some of this may come from, and the same kind of thing comes, I hear about like guinea fowl on occasion, these chicken-like birds. And some of this goes back to like laboratory studies where you have some animal, a bat or a chicken or something like that, and you say, oh, it ate, when we provided them, it ate 5 ticks in this span of time. Therefore, if we extrapolate, they could eat 1,000 a day or whatever it may be. I have looked at papers in the scientific literature, like, you know, folks have captured possums for studies or looked at roadkill ones and look at the gut contest just to see what they're eating. And it's not completely full of ticks or anything like that. So again, this idea that possums are just out there hoovering them up, I haven't seen science to back that up.
There goes my Olive the opossum.
Jane, I'm going to adopt. If I've told you once, I feel like I tell you this every day. If you want to get a possum, buy a possum. Just remember, you will officially be the lady with a possum,
possum
in the neighborhood.
So. That's probably not good. Cindy from Appleton. Cindy, we only got about 90 seconds left. Thank you for joining us. Did you have a question for PJ? Cindy, go ahead. Nope, apparently not. Cindy cannot hear us. Cindy, you can always call back if you want, but again, we got about 2 minutes left. PJ, we're not going to have time to delve into this too deeply, but the state of our pollinators is still really serious, is it not? We should be planting lots of flowers in our yards.
It is. I mean, we've been hearing about this for years in terms of bees, and usually in the news, what we get bombarded with is news about honeybees, which really important agriculturally, but they're not native. And as humans, we can raise them as colonies. We can split them into 2 colonies, increase their numbers. What is much more alarming to me are all our wild pollinators. We've got about 500 species of bees in the state. So if you take out honeybees and bumblebees, we've got 475 or so other species
That
often just fly under the radar. Folks don't recognize what they are. A lot of them might look wasp-like and be mistaken for something else. But then there's all the beetles, flies, butterflies, moths, which often get a bad rap. Those can be critical pollinators too. And we're seeing issues with those as well. And really we're hearing more and more rumblings about general insect declines. And what's scary to me, I mean, we know agriculture and land use changes play a role with this, but scientists are seeing in kind of pristine wilderness areas compared to 30 years ago, drastic declines in numbers and diversity of insects, which is really scary to me.
Well, they might be creepy crawly, but we need them.
We need them.
We need our bugs.
Yes, very much so.
We're going to get you back before another 6 months go by. PJ Leash is the Wisconsin bug guy, heads up the entomology diagnostic unit at UW-Madison. Thank you so much, PJ. We'll have you back soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate your time. News is coming up next when we return Audio Sorbet. We lighten things up for the last half hour of the show. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Sometimes it all comes together, baby. Sometimes you're just a fool in love.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For WXCO News, I'm Brittany Merlot. Milwaukee Public Schools is facing another deadline. Stuart J. Waddles tells us more.
The district must submit a plan by Tuesday to the Wisconsin Department of Health Services on how it will prevent further lead problems. Milwaukee Public Schools was recently fined more than $6,000 after state inspectors found 13 new instances of noncompliance at schools. District leaders say they're addressing the issues and working with contractors to ensure that all buildings are safe for students by the start of the next school year.
And lawmakers are considering a pollinator protection package of bills, which could lead to the regulation of insecticide use across the state. Terry Barr has the details.
A loss of habitat, disease, and pesticides continues to lead to the decline of our bees and butterflies. These pollinators contribute significantly to our food supply and crops worth billions of dollars in Wisconsin.
We need everybody to kind of come together and be like, pesticide, number one, it's been bad for pollinators. And number two, it doesn't appear to be totally effective in terms of increasing crop yield. So it may not be great to use from a financial standpoint for farmers. So how do we come together and address this problem?
Amy Berrio is with Clean Wisconsin and says a new group made up of environmental and agriculture advocates is working to educate residents about what's known as neonic pesticides. It's similar to putting nicotine on your plants. They are also speaking out in support of these pollinator protection bills.
And some state organizations have received a portion of funding for habitat restoration and conservation projects along the Great Lakes. Governor Tony Evers and the Department of Administration announced over $750,000 in total funding from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration for the projects. I'm Brittany Merlot for WXCO.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Believe it or not, Hollywood is making a sequel. In this case, it is the fourth in a series of Meet the Parents films. The Hollywood Reporter says Owen Wilson has officially signed on to the project, joining Ben Stiller, Robert De Niro, Terry Polo, and newcomer to the cast, Ariana Grande. It's always nice to have a fresh face. Paramount Pictures is teaming up with Universal for the latest installment, which is co-written by John Hamburg, who also co-wrote the previous three films and will direct this new chapter. If you listen to Nightlight here on the Civic Media Radio Network, you've probably heard me talk about this franchise quite a bit, as it was started by frequent guest and writer Greg Liana, whose $50,000 independent film ended up at Universal Studios and is now one of the highest-grossing live-action comedy franchises ever. Meet the Parents is expected to hit theaters Thanksgiving of 2026. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Sunny, hot, and humid still today with the heat advisory in effect until 7 o'clock tonight. Then the cold front moves in, but also dragging some strong to severe storms with it, packing heavy downpours and high winds, with the front stalling over us through tomorrow, too. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 80 degrees at our studios.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, I'm live from Madison, where I welcome the Green Bay Automobile Gallery's Daryl Burnett. And we rank our all-time favorite summer blockbuster movies. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Brewers hosting the Pirates later on. Our broadcast will start at 6:05, and you can listen to the game on terrestrial radio in Richland Center on WRCE, WISS in Oshkosh, WRJN here in Racine and Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls near Butternut.
Butternut.
And WEZH in Hayward.
They also may have a chance to just go to a game.
Yeah.
They need to listen to here on Free Ticket Fridays.
Free Ticket Fridays,
exactly.
Absolutely.
And I'm just thinking about baseball because I need to go. Sorry.
I'm surprised you haven't been yet.
Oh, me too, Jane. Me too.
Maybe this will be the week. But our broadcast starts tonight at 6:05. The crew hosting the Pirates here on Civic Media. This is the portion of the show where we try and lighten things up and take a little break away from the news. We call it Audio Sorbet. A cleansing of the ears, just so we can all take a breath and maybe have a couple chuckles.
We're going to get in them ears and clean them.
We're going to do that. So this came up last week.
Yeah.
We didn't get around to this, but here is the question of the day.
Yeah.
Do you still balance your checkbook? 855-752-4842. Do you still balance your checkbook? That's our audio sorbet question for today. 855-752-4842.
And if you place your hand upon your ear and listen to the West, you can just hear all the people under 40 going, what?
They do what? You did what?
You do. Oh, my Mima has a checkbook.
But now you know someone.
I know. Well, I don't just know someone. I know someone.
Someones.
Yes.
Yeah, so, who are younger.
No.
No.
No, 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 no. So one older,
okay.
One younger. That
okay.
was a, so I was hanging out with my mother-in-law, wonderful lady, Patty Becker, what's up? And she was talking about still balancing her checkbook. And it's just something she does. It, you know, of course it does the job it's supposed to do, but it's also like it makes me feel better
yeah.
thing. Understood.
I like to know where all my pennies are, and mm-hmm. this is one way I can do that.
I do not balance my checkbook. I do not own a checkbook. I do not write checks. If I pay everything online, and the only thing I would ever pull checks out for, live cashier checks, were for rent, because I had landlords in the past who would hold on to rent checks for a while
yep.
until he got all of them, and then
boom. That would really screw up your balance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't deal with it. Fine, do your thing, but I just sort of attributed it to like, oh, my mother-in-law is almost 80. Of course she balances the checkbook. She loves Lawrence Welk. It's adorable. Then my friend who is, I'm 3 years younger than me, shot up and goes, I still balance my checkbook too. I'm like, oh, I'm the one who's out of place here right now.
You're the one.
I am not of the cool. Because you know how, Jane, you know how like bell bottoms always come back and records are now back with quite ferocity.
Trends return.
Yeah, people are listening to cassette tapes again. I don't know why. Maybe balancing checkbooks is the new cool retro thing to do.
Oh, could be.
Could be.
It could be.
I mean, that would mean
we are embracing all kinds of retro things.
That would mean you'd have to go to a bank. I don't mean just like text your bank. You have to walk into a bank.
Go into the physical bank.
Order checks. Wait for them to be delivered. They're not just going to be like, oh, here's your digital scan copy of checks. It's a process. Once you get that big folder of checks, then someone has to teach you how to write a check, because I guarantee you a lot of people don't know how to write
checks.
That's
really interesting. Yeah. I never thought of that.
It's an involved process. Like, you got to get all the information correct, or else you never know.
So we got two questions going.
Oh,
do
boy.
You know how to write a check? And do you still balance your checkbook? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Todd from De Pere, listening in Green Bay on WGBW, says, I do balance my checkbook, but I use Excel every day.
Okay.
Rich in Wisconsin Rapids, listening on WAUK. Yep, I've been balancing for 51 years.
There you go.
Good for you.
I was never, I was given the great gift of financial literacy from a very young age. Not always responsibility because I'm, you know, but financial literacy. I started writing checks at a young age.
Right.
I started having my own, being responsible for my own money at a young age. But what's funny is that my parents never sat me down and said, all right, we're going to teach you how to balance your checkbook. That always felt like something adults did. I started writing checks probably in my early teens.
Wow.
Because I had my own checking account.
Okay.
And of course, it was supervised by my parents. But like, I never learned how to balance a checkbook. Plus, it's also math, which at that age was like, no, thank you. I'll just be broke.
I'd rather be surprised.
I'd rather write a bad check than do mathematics.
Do you still balance your checkbook? Do you still write checks? 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. There are a couple of things I still write checks for.
Like what?
The city of water department.
Yeah.
I write a check to them quarterly.
Why do you do that?
Because it comes in the mail.
See,
I pay it.
I get my little card in the mail we pay it every other month.
Okay.
I have a dashboard set up online and I get an email saying your water bill is available. And I literally pay the water bill the moment
that
I get it. Because the first time I got a water bill, I paid it. Then the second one, I just forgot about it. And then the next water bill was like twice as much. And then I realized that. But
it's an unpleasant surprise.
I do not write checks for that. No, I just don't write checks. I just don't.
And I did balance my checkbook for years and years and years.
Do you do what Roger from Stevens Point does? He monitors his checking account through his app.
See, now I check the bank website.
Exactly.
And that's where I know where I am.
I have.
But I do not fill out the physical check recorder anymore.
No.
I haven't done that in a long time.
I have the same thing. I check my app all the time. And also I get notifications on my phone that say, you know, your account has been debited. There's been a spending on your account and everything matches. So if something even honestly, Jane, if it's like if I go to Quick Trip and buy a soda for $1.05, it's telling me $1.05 has been spent.
Yeah.
So I always know what's going on.
855-752-4842. Audio sorbet today is, do you still balance your checkbook? Do you still write checks? Roger from Stevens Point. I monitor my checking account weekly, so I balance my checkbook through my bank's app. Jan from Oak Creek. I balance my checkbook every day online for security and because I must. I have gotten in trouble many years ago, not keeping a good track of it, and I have learned I must discipline myself to do it every day. I don't write checks, though I do carry one in my purse, just in case.
Yeah.
And I keep the paper and pencil ledger of my checkbook, too. Good for you, Jen.
Yeah.
But again, good for you for recognizing that you got in trouble because you weren't paying close enough attention to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, honestly, like, we always hear stories of identity theft and whatnot, but there are stories out there of people just like someone getting your information, spending $35 on something, or, you know, it's those small, like they can get in there and
those spend, little, oh, yeah, definitely.
And also fees are out there and it's a good, you know, the question of do you balance your checkbook is one that is fun to talk about, but it really that financial literacy of your account being vigilant and looking at whether it's in your checkbook, whether it's online, whether it's going to the bank and asking for a printout of your history, which they will do for you.
Yep.
But yeah, Jan, that's very, very good stuff to do. But yeah, there's no way I'm going back to checks. No, thank you.
Not for anything.
Well, most of the places I go anyways don't accept them.
Yeah. And you hate to, well, for one thing, you hate to be the person at the grocery store pulling out the check with four people behind you, because you will hear the collective groan.
Do they even still accept checks anymore?
I think it depends upon where you shop.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe in smaller communities. Mike, Calvin, do you even know how to write a check as our resident young person?
You know, I'm slightly offended by that, but I'll take it as tried. Yes, I do know how to write a check. I have a checkbook. That being said, the last time I used it was probably paying rent in college, so it's been a couple years since I've even used it.
Wow.
That Calvin, I was not expecting that answer at all, so you have every right to feel insulted by that, because I mean, honestly, at your age, and there's a lot of landlords out there who accept Venmo or will do direct bank transfers and things that. So I would absolutely assume that not only would I assume you didn't have a checkbook, but you wouldn't know how because young people don't.
You don't have to.
You don't have to. It's not something you need to do to survive.
See, and maybe that's a generational thing too, because the whole Venmo thing just makes me twitchy.
I don't think it's a general. I don't think it's a generation thing. I know plenty of people your age who are on Venmo.
No.
Yeah. Why?
No.
Why?
It's like we are so automated and so there's, I just know.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Have you ever bought anything online?
Perhaps.
What's the difference?
There's a little lock in the left-hand corner.
You think Venmo is just like, it's like some guy named Steve going, he goes,
his name is Steve Venmo.
Hey, Calvin, you got to pay Jane. I'll give her some money. You pay me back later.
It's just the newer technologies. I'm going to wait. I want to sit back a little bit and watch
Venmo
this.
Venmo didn't come out last month. It's been around for a long time.
Not for a decade.
Almost. Those peer-to-peer paying sites have been around for a while. I'll make you a Venmo site. It's secure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want it.
Because it's...
I'm not going to use it.
You sound like my
mom.
Sound like my mom when CDs came out. She's like, I won't need CDs. I have all these tapes. And then a month or two later, she's like, I bought the Beatles White Album on CD.
855-752-4842. Do you still balance your checkbook? Do you still write checks? Kurt from Eau Claire. I have had a checkbook for 46 years and never balanced it.
Yeah.
I write checks now because I refuse to pay convenience fees. And now with the internet, I check my Friday every week on Fridays.
That's a great thing to do. That's very, very smart.
Yep.
Convenience fees. And I never thought about that. They'll charge you fees no matter what.
If they can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cindy from Appleton is on the line. Good morning, Cindy. Thanks for joining us. What do you want to say about this?
Well, Venmo. What's Venmo?
Oh, stop. You've heard
Thank
of
you,
Venmo, Cindy.
Cindy. Thank you, Cindy.
I'm serious. I have no idea what half of these things are. And I do like you, Jane. I go on my account and online just about daily to make sure, you know, everything looks kosher. But I'm starting to feel like I'm being discriminated against. And I'll give you a little story from this weekend.
Continue.
Okay.
Continue.
I was down in Fort Atkinson for an event Friday night. And on my way home, I'm doing this 30 trails challenge with the Fox Cities Greenways. So I stopped at the Glacial River Trail, rode about 6-7 miles on that. And then I went up to Jefferson and got on the Glacial Drummond Trail. And when I got to the Glacial Drummond Trail, there was no place to pay anything except with a QR code. I don't have a smartphone. I can't use a QR code. So I called the office number and I said, what am I supposed to do? I don't have a way to do this. I'm an old lady. I don't believe in all this crap. And so she said, well, nobody's going to do anything. Don't worry about it. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, when I get home, I'll make a payment online, which is what I did. But I'm like, this is baloney.
You are such a good person for doing that, Cindy.
I think it's
Cindy.
So
good
funny.
For you.
I do not have a smartphone. I'll go online at home and do it.
Because she's a good, responsible human being. Well done, Cindy.
You both are silly billies.
That's great. All right, when we return, we're going to wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing, the Lost and Found edition. Stay close. This is Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. For the last few months, Governor Tony Evers has said repeatedly that he would make a decision about whether or not to run for a third term after the state budget process is completed. In a recent opinion column at the Recombobulation Area, I made the argument that the decision that Evers should make should be to not seek a third term as Wisconsin's governor. This argument is not one of ideological differences or policy disagreements. Tony Evers has been a good governor and has served the state well. This more has to do with Evers' age.
he'll be 75 years old in November 2026, and about how the Democratic Party has had a massive, inescapable problem in its unwillingness to pass the torch to the next generation. Tony Evers needs to do what so many other Democrats have struggled so mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. And after Joe Biden's catastrophic 2024, this is a conversation we need to be having, and we need to be having it now. Democrats can't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. It's time to do things differently.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Todd Michaels joins us now.
I have to give a shout out to Oshkosh. It's a very underrated city.
There was also a restaurant there I really liked. I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, the Tally's was great. I may have gone to like a prom dinner there or something like that back in my day too, Pete.
A little calzone before you tear it up in the dance floor.
Man, there's nothing better than wearing a tuxedo and a little calzone in your cummerbund.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. For free, find a mentor today at score.org.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 98.9 WXCO.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Mayer on Air. Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Mock, Calvitini on the board, coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up tomorrow, Todd Alba, our friend and colleague and host of the Todd Alba Show. From 2 to 4 across the network, he is going to join us at 9:35 to talk all things news. Maybe we'll have some movement on the Wisconsin state budget. Yeah, probably not.
No.
Nah, I don't think so. They're just going to walk away from it. But anyway, Todd will be joining us tomorrow in the first hour at 9:35. So I hope you can join us for that. Right now, it is 10:53, Calvin. That means it's time for...
This shouldn't be a thing.
As always, if you have a thing you think should not be, send it into Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. This is from upi.com. Ben Hooper, our hero.
Ben Hooper back, baby!
With the byline. Headline reads, items left on British buses include bales of hay and a frozen turkey.
What?
British transport company Megabus sharing some of its most unusual lost property that people leave behind on their buses, including hay bales, a frozen turkey, a wok, and false teeth. Now that you would think would jump out at you.
I mean,
you would need those unless you got an extra set.
I'm just imagining you're just taking your teeth out and putting them in the chair next to you.
Or in the little pouch thing.
A seat you have not paid for. It's illegally riding.
That your teeth?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I feel bad for the person who forgot the frozen turkey because they got off and they're like, and as the bus is pulling away, they're like, oh, Meemaw's going to kill me. I had one job.
But that you wouldn't think that would you would miss that? Why, I got onto the bus carrying a frozen turkey. I am leaving the bus without something.
Okay, I will defend this on one point.
Okay.
How often are you carrying frozen turkeys?
Never.
Okay. How often are you carrying your purse? More often, you'd say?
Yes.
So when you get off a bus or you get off a piece.
Because it's not a regular
thing. It's not a regular thing. You may not think about it. And a bus can be like, I got to get off the bus. Like, I understand why you'd forget something very unusual because you're not used to it being there in your life. Therefore, you're watching the bus drive away.
I think you're being very generous.
I'm being very generous because we've all forgotten that thing where we like,
I can't believe I forgot that thing.
My friend left a comedy event once to go get a mic stand because the mic stand was gone. He went back to the club, got the mic stand, walked into the building without the mic stand in his hand. So I can understand why you might forget something that
it
unusual.
Happens.
Exactly.
It happens. We're talking lost and found on the British bus company Megabus. Other items found in May.
Just in May.
Winnie the Pooh stuffed toy. A jar of honey. Would have been nice if it was sitting right next to Winnie the Pooh. A Radiohead vinyl record.
Which one?
Insulin.
Oh, God.
An electric razor. A Neil Diamond CD. A collection of historic coins and stamps.
Oh, boy.
A guitar.
Tell me more.
And a single shoe.
It's like, you ever like driving, Jane, and you just see a shoe on the freeway?
Yes.
Like, how did that happen?
Yes. I went to a college with a woman who said that she claimed it was snow pigs. That was because we would always see them. You always see one. You never see two shoes lined correct. By the side of the road. You see one shoe.
But snow pigs. What are
snow
those?
Snow pigs. They're invisible. You can't see them. Oh. They hide in drifts and then they come out and grab one shoe. That was her explanation. Well, yeah, it was college.
So this is just me. Jane, we could do this monthly. The monthly report of Megabus.
From Megabus?
Lost and found. Because if this is just May.
I know, just May. In years past, they have found 3 bales of hay, which are big. Hay bales are big.
Yeah.
Family tree documents, a frozen turkey, false teeth, multiple single shoes and socks. Megabus says about 95% of lost and found items are eventually returned to their owners.
Really?
Those that go unclaimed after 28 days get donated to charity. Anyone who loses an item on a Megabus is encouraged to report your lost frozen turkey on their website.
Oh, great. You've donated a right tennis shoe. Amazing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Megabus. You're helping the good work.
Really helped a lot.
I really hope there's a June report.
We'll go back. We'll double check and see what...
We'll request Ben Hooper to do this.
When Megabus does their next report on June.
How amazing would it be if we could get Megabus on the show monthly to talk about their lost and found?
We can try and make that happen.
Amazing.
We have the power.
We do.
All right. That wraps up today's episode of...
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Also coming up this week, Jim Santel will be back on Thursday along with Brittany Merlot. A little weather and wine. We still have this heat warning in effect, I believe, until 7 o'clock tonight.
Yeah.
So please be careful. Keep an eye on yourself and your neighbors and especially your pets. Mm-hmm. Good time to let the dog, I don't know, chase the tennis ball in the house.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Yeah.
And then maybe storms coming in tonight. So hopefully that's going to clear out here a little bit.
Cool. Hot rain.
All right. Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers, because without you, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and for texting and for listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today, even if it's just a little bit, and you have the chance to share it. Keep it right here. News coming up next, followed by Tom Hartman from 11 to 2 across the vast statewide, countrywide. Take us global on the app. The Civic Media Radio Network, and we'll see you tomorrow.
are listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Israel said today it will continue hitting military targets in Iran in the coming days. At the White House, CBS's Weijia Jiang.
The U.S. is not ruling out more attacks. They are saying it really depends on Iran, and if necessary, they will respond again.
Israel says today it hit the Fordo nuclear facility in Iran, one of the U.S. targets over the weekend, also hitting a prison. NATO chief calls on member nations to spend more for the defense of the alliance.
As the world becomes more dangerous, allied leaders will take bold decisions to strengthen our collective defense.
Millions are sweltering in a heat wave that stretches right from the nation's midsection into the east. CBS's Rob Marciano.
Baltimore, Philly, Richmond, even New York City tomorrow, actual temperature measured in the shade could be over 100 degrees. That would be the first time we've done that since 2012.
CBS News Brief. I'm Steve.